This episode is brought to you by Hill's Pet Nutrition. Every shelter pet deserves a second chance, and you're making it possible for thousands of them every day. Because when you feed your pet Hill's, you help feed a shelter pet, which helps make them healthy, happy, and more adoptable, changing their life forever. So they can change yours. Over 14 million shelter pets fed and adopted. Science did that. Visit hillspet.com/podcast to learn more.
This week in PlayStation, we're talking about more on the Horizon TV show, PlayStation's PC moves, and what's next for Metal Gear Solid. We'll have all this and more because this is PSI Love You XOXO. Welcome to the show, everybody. That's Blessing. That's Young. Yeah, I'm Greg, and this is a show you can get on patreon.com/kindoffunnygames. There, you can watch us record it live, get it ad-free, and get it with the weekly post show. If you have no bucks toss our way, support us on the Epic Game Store, Fortnite, Rocket League, or wherever else they'll accept that creator code, kindoffunny. You can get PSI Love You XOXO for free with ads and without the post show over on youtube.com/kindoffunnygames, roosterteeth.com, and podcast services around the globe each and every week. Thank you to our Patreon producers, Gordon McGuire, Fargo Brady, Tyler Ross, Delaney Twinning, First Responder ND, Olive Party from the KF Community Discord, Julian the Gluten-Free Gamer, Alex J. Sandoval, Casey Andrew, James Hastings. Today we're brought to you by Athletic Greens. But first, let's start with a PSN message from you. Actually, Young, hey, how are you?
Hey, how you doing, man? Happy to be here. Thank you for having me.
You, hey, that's Blessing. You know him. That's talked to him. Of course. You're the first guest we've had since we've restructured the show just to be pow, get right into it. Oh. So it's like, where do we enter? I guess the PSN message we have to introduce. Who are you, Young, and what do you do?
Well, I'm Young, yeah. I do YouTube content. I talk about video games. I review video games from time to time as well. I do some voice acting here and there as well. And
some voice acting.
Here and there, yeah, you know, climbing that ladder. It's been fun. And excited to dive into today's topic. It's obviously one that's near and dear to my heart if folks have been following my channel for a bit.
Yeah, of course, you and I met at a Metal Gear Solid event, so I'm very excited to talk to you about the future of Metal Gear Solid. But before all that, y'all, we're going to start with the PSN message. It comes from Mark Starvaghi, who wrote into patreon.com/kindoffunnygames and says, do you have your PlayStation situated vertically or horizontally, and why? Mark says, mine is vertical because I love the way it looks. Young, how do you have your PlayStation 5?
I literally have my consoles behind the monitors and connected to this HDMI split and all that. And it's all vertical just because, it conserves space. In my living room, though, it's horizontal. So it depends on the situation. I don't discriminate there. I'm a fan of both.
I'm with Mark that I think it looks better. But do you think it looks better horizontal? Because I thought it was a given that vertical looked better.
Yeah, I think the PlayStation 5, I like vertical better. It just like shows off. I don't know. Horizontal looks like, I don't know. It looks weird horizontal to me.
It's doing too much. Like the shape doesn't look like it's meant for horizontal.
It's meant to go up. I mean, it looks like the ISRON, right? That's why it goes up like that. That's how it should be, I think.
I mean, the way they showed it when they first announced it was vertical. That's how they, like, when they zoomed out. I mean, just saying, that's like the official reveal. So.
Plus, I think don't you technically need a base to it too if you have it placed horizontally?
That's true.
But it technically need a base for if it's vertical as well.
Yeah, that's right.
Oh,
you got vents. Bless your vents.
Yeah. I mean, so far so good. It's lived this long.
Vertical, you like screw it in or something, if I recall. And then horizontal, you like there's like a little notch, you like place it in the back or something. It's this whole process. Yeah. And the Xbox is just a giant freaking rectangle. It's just a giant box. So you can just like.
Can you have that horizontally, the Xbox, or does it have to be vertically?
No, you can do it horizontal.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah, I got mine.
There are rubber feet on the sides, if you will, if you place it vertically.
I have the Series S, so whenever I look at the X, it looks like it's something that would be, I don't know why, but scary to put horizontally. I don't know.
It definitely doesn't have the same vibe. You know, I think console manufacturing will never hit the heights of the PlayStation 2 launch model with the PlayStation logo you could turn. Because that was like when you're like, I am making a choice that if I'm putting it horizontal, I'm turning the PlayStation logo to be horizontal. And if I'm bringing it back up, I'm turning the PlayStation logo to be north and south on it or whatever. Like that was them saying, you can do no wrong. And from there on out, I feel like we have a bunch of consoles where it's like, clearly this is meant to be one way or the other. Mm-hmm. Like a PlayStation 4, sure, you could stand, and I did stand it here and there, but it wasn't meant to be.
Yeah, I agree with that.
That was meant to lay flat. That was meant to be right there. PlayStation 5 meant to stand up vertically.
This is the first console generation where both the big consoles seem meant to be stood up vertically, right?
I agree with that. Yeah. 100%.
Is that because of PC? Have they decided that PC gaming has just been the thing that rules all and we should just lean into what they are? Huh. Maybe there's just too many components in these things that like we have to make them bulky, and to make them bulky, it makes more sense to have them vertical as opposed to horizontal.
I think there's some of that tied into it, but there's also the fact that, yeah, if it has to be this bulky, we have to make it seem like these are stylistic choices.
Yeah.
Right.
And there's also the surface area aspect of like, if you put it vertically, it just takes up less surface area space. So you can like put more stuff on a surface technically, unless you want to pile them on top of each other, which wouldn't be ideal. I don't know. Efficiency wise, vertical makes sense. But
for years, you figure we were marching towards this small and just black. Just get it smaller and smaller and blacker and blacker, so it can just hide on a shelf, an entertainment center, or whatever.
Right.
And now, yeah, this generation for sure, both Xbox and PlayStation are like, well, we are here and we're very loud, right. So like, we might as well lean into it.
Curious to see what PlayStation 5 Slim model will be like. I guess Xbox with a Series S has its Slim model, if you will, but it's, you know, the hardware's a little different and all that. But yeah, curious to see.
It was going around last week or the week before that, where a guy had gone and like basically made a PlayStation 5 into like a smaller laptop, like pretty much.
Yeah, it's a little thing, and the like ventilation's like outside or something. He like took some copper stuff and like wired it out. I don't know. It's this whole contraption. It's crazy.
Yeah, it's always that thing. I don't, you know, the best forms of consoles are the ones where they show you the new one. You're like, oh, I didn't even think about that. But yeah, I want that. I need that. Like, I still like my PlayStation 5 how it looks. Like, granted, we're all gamers and we're not trying to hide that or whatever, but even as I just look over here where I have my work PlayStation's in the pink outfit, the pink covers or whatever, like it pops and it's big and it's beautiful and it's glowing right now. Yeah. I'm like, yeah, I love that. Yeah.
I like my red crimson. Like, I don't know how I felt about it with the white. It felt very loud. Is that your Siri, Greg? Who is that? You got somebody at your door?
She aims to please. She must have heard something right somewhere.
But yeah, like not that I didn't like how it looked. It's just that it was very loud. You know, I didn't like the fact that if I wanted to have an entertainment center that was, all right, everything is black, everything is, it feels like a piece of technology here, the PS5 would be the one thing to stack out and go, hey, I'm here. Like, I am here. I am loud. Notice me. I am in your entertainment center. That's why I do appreciate that they've done the plate thing, because now mine is the crimson red one, which is still loud, but it's loud in a way that I like. Like, red is my favorite color, and if you are going to go for something that is more, you know, stylistic or different, if you double down on the red, like the crimson red, I'm in for it. I'm down for it.
I wanted to be at the meeting where all of the first-party developers were like, yeah, let's make our new consoles just lean into the white and black aesthetic. Because that's what I'm keeping my PS5 basic plates, because then it matches with my OLED Switch. It matches with my Series S. If I get new plates, I feel like it doesn't, you know.
You lose the vibe.
Yeah, it loses the vibe.
That's true.
Fair enough. The black's pretty sleek, though. If you put the black plates on, you want to go full stealth mode, full Batman mode. Yeah, that's the one.
It was tough at the beginning, though, of the generation, where it was, if you're somebody who wanted to get both an Xbox Series X and a PS5, if you're one of those richies out there that has all the money in the world that can spend money on both these things and somehow get them, you are dealing with the PS5 that looks like this futuristic Detroit Become Human machine. And then if you're getting the Xbox Series X, right, you have this just fucking brutal obelisk of a machine.
Monolith,
and having them sit next to each other, they look like they're from different timelines. And at the beginning of the generation, I would figure that's a struggle. Like, I'm somebody who happens to have both because we're in media and we're lucky enough to get sent them. But like, having them next to each other, I'm like, there's no way I can make this work aesthetically. And again, thank God for the plates, because the plates help a little bit. They still look really weird sitting next to each other, but I've given up on the style. Like, these things are just sitting on the floor next to my my desk at this point, just for like the streaming and gameplay and all the stuff that we do for work. But if I was trying to make this work in an entertainment center, I'd be struggling.
Yeah.
I like the idea of putting them behind the monitors like you did.
I'm just glad the PlayStation 5 doesn't sound like a jet engine like the PlayStation 4.
Oh,
that's all I care about.
Let me talk about the Steam Deck.
Yeah.
What's the one on Steam Deck?
Oh, the Steam Deck sounds like a jet engine.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah. Oh, does it?
For it's me, not it's bad.
Like, yeah.
It's not
as bad. Let me turn mine on.
Whoa.
Holy shit.
You don't deserve it.
He's joined the deck bros. Or the deck boys.
I was in my room.
Yong's in your we know you have it, Yong. I saw you.
It looks so tiny in your hands, Greg.
I'm a giant man. And that's the thing I'm talking about. Like,
it does, huh?
It feels awesome in my hands.
It does.
Like when I was going around trying to install stuff today and starting to walk through how to get Ghostbusters and the Sega Master System on it, I was like, yeah, this is the stuff. I'm looking forward to playing some games on this thing.
This is the worst PlayStation podcast.
Fine then. Let's move to topic of the show. Gentlemen, the last Metal Gear game was Metal Gear Survive. In 2018.
Woo. Yuck.
Metacritic, depending on your platform, ranges from a 54 to a 62. And now the PlayStation Nation turns its lonely eyes to Konami and has to ask, what's next for Metal Gear? Yong, I know you from the Metal Gear Solid 5 event. We went down there, we played it, we reviewed it together. That's where I met you for the first time.
Yeah.
What is your history with the franchise Metal Gear?
So I mean, when I first played Metal Gear Solid 1 was my first game, my first foray into the series. And I remember I borrowed it from this friend when I was still living in Venezuela. I saw this box art, and I'm like, that art style is super cool. Whatever that game is, can I borrow it? He's like, oh, yeah, I've already finished it. Here, take it. And I brought it home, loaded it up in my PC, installed it in my Compaq Presario. I mean, I don't know. I forget. Really old PC, but it ran well, and man, just the second that the little operatic thing that plays at the beginning, the best is yet to come. That's it. That started playing. I'm immediately immersed. I'm like, what is this? And then the dialogue starts kicking in. It's like, I've not played anything like this at the time where it felt so cinematic, and I was already in love.
Yeah.
And I go through the game. I love the level design, I finished that game and I'm like, I got to play more of this. And by that time, Metal Gear Solid 2 come out on PC as well. And so I had another friend who had that game. I borrowed that. That game, playing that as a kid, it's trippy, when especially towards the end when, you know, the AIs start to go crazy and all that.
Right. Turn off your unit. Turn off.
Yeah. Turn off your console. Turn off the game. I'm like, do I turn off my game? Do I need to do that to progress? I don't know. From there, I've just been, there was just nothing like it. And to this day, like, it's such a unique identity. It's such a Kojima thing. Metal Gear Solid 4 took me a while to play because my parents wouldn't get me a PlayStation 3. And so I know.
Cowards.
Cowards. But I remember, watching those trailers over and over and over again. I love seeing Raiden as a badass, fighting Vamp and stuff like that. I remember watching that.
How old were you when MGS4 came out?
Oh man! So when did it? I was born in 2008. Okay, I was born in 1992, so I was probably in my teens at that point.
Because you mentioned like you know your parents wouldn't get you MGS4, and that put me in the same place of like I was in high school when MGS4 came out, and I didn't even have a PS3 at that point.
Right.
And so I would be looking over friends' shoulders or going online and just watching YouTube videos of people doing MGS online shit with each other. And just like living vicariously through stuff going on.
Yeah. But it was like, I love the legacy aspect of it. It's so like generational, you know. It's like you start with Big Boss and you go all the way to Solid Snake, and there's so much like tying all that together. And so I would always like just look up the story and did all this research and just like became really ingrained with the lore. And then, you know, I decided one day to like try this YouTube thing. And I'm like, nobody's like covering Metal Gear all that much. Why is that? I should do that because nobody else is doing it. And people were responsive to that. And then that kind of got me into Metal Gear Solid 5. I did a bunch of coverage for that. And I ended up in the review event, and that's how we met. And I've just been in love with the series since, I mean, as far as I can remember, really. So it's one of my favorite franchises of all time. It's probably my favorite alongside Zelda.
I want to commend you too, because you're definitely about that life. Because you mentioned before that, you know, I met you recently at Summer Game Fest, and you're awesome because I met you twice. I met you the first time on like, it was like Friday night or something.
Yeah, the party at the rooftop.
There was a rooftop party, and it was like a group of people hanging together, and I like introduced myself. And like somebody was like, oh yeah, I'm this person, I do work for this outlet. And then you introduced yourself, but like the music was loud. And yeah. So like, I didn't catch your name totally, but then I was like, okay, what outlets do you work for? And you're like, oh, my own YouTube channel. And I was like, oh, cool, this guy has his own YouTube channel. And then it didn't hit me until later that night that it was Yong Ya. And I was like, wait a second, I know that guy. I've seen his content before. And so the day after, we were at like a mixer. I see you again, and you're rocking a Death Stranding shirt.
Death Stranding shirt.
And I was like, yep, this guy absolutely is about that life. Like, this guy is down to rep Kojima wherever he goes.
Damn right, damn right.
And I love that Yong's like, oh yeah, I nobody was covering Metal Gear on YouTube, so I started to, and I kind of got going. Like, you have 1.2 million followers on your subscribers on YouTube. Yeah, you're doing pretty well.
Yeah, it's crazy. It just kind of happened, but yeah, happy to be in, blessed to be in my position, and just I hope I get to talk about Metal Gear again and to go down that train, that conspiracy hole, rabbit hole again. I miss those days.
So I guess that's the best place to start, right? Mm-hmm. And first off, I do want to, the chat was already trying to dime me out for how old I am. I want to dime out. You're like, oh, my parents wouldn't buy me the place that I came home from freshman year of that's not even true. I came home for Thanksgiving from freshman year of college. So in my first Thanksgiving after being away, and that's when my mom had already gone and picked up my pre-order for Metal Gear Solid 2. I was coming home. Metal Gear Solid 2, I was in college already coming home to complain that or whatever. She got me the manual too. But you talk about this, you want to talk about Metal Gear one day.
Yeah.
Yong, are you going, do you think we're getting another Metal Gear one day?
Yes, I do think so. I don't think it's going to be a brand new entry. I think Konami's going to play it safe and license out somebody to make a remake, and that's kind of where the general rumors have been at.
Right, I can interject, of course, and I'm sure you know, but to bring everybody up to speed and we'll pepper in news as we go, we as a Games Daily and press enthusiast press industry always talk about Konami pachinko machines and how they turn their back on consoles and yada yada yada. Don't forget that Konami did say that, hey, we are going back to it. They just had their most profitable year ever, so we'll see. But they did say that they were looking into getting into core games again and getting back to that, right? And one of those rumors that has been getting kicked around quite a bit is the fact that Konami is working with Virtuous on a Metal Gear Solid 3 remake. Mm-hmm. That was a job listing that got put out. People went off of that and jumped around from there, let alone the fact that in general they own it, and if they're working with a million other thing, like they are, talking to Bloober Team, they've already said they're making games with Bloober Team, they're making more Bomberman games. There's Konami is coming back into real gaming, theoretically. Yeah, say they are. And then Metal Gear Solid 3, the rumor has been, I'm an IGN right now, remaking Metal Gear Solid 3 is studio rumored to be remaking, and that's on October 11th, 2021. So that was late last year that rumor really started getting kicked around, with VGC talking a lot and referencing some job postings.
And some other folks are saying it might be a Metal Gear Solid 1 remake. Who knows? Personally, a 3 remake would be kind of incredible. That's
Because it's the best narratively.
Oh, sorry, go ahead.
I was saying because 3 is the best one.
Yeah. And the gameplay, shows a little age here and there. And so if they can modernize it a little bit and just add some extra bits and flares and just but keep the story as is, I think it could be incredible. Beyond all that, Video Games Chronicle released this article where they talked about, our sources have told us that multiple studios are working on Silent Hill, and lo and behold, we've seen the Silent Hill leaks now. We pretty much know that to be true. Bloober Team apparently is working on Silent Hill 2 remake. Annapurna, I believe they're working on an episodic, smaller serialized Silent Hill, a series of games. And then the Japanese studio is making a mainline new entry, is what's being said.
Yeah.
And then we're seeing that kind of coming to fruition. And alongside those rumors, that same article talked about how they've heard Castlevania is going to be revived and Metal Gear is going to be revived. So I feel like it's a matter of when, not if, at this point.
For sure.
What do you think the roadmap looks like? Because, talking about Silent Hill, it seems like they have all these grand ideas, from having Bloober Team work on a version, having Annapurna or any other smaller developer work on this episodic thing, and then having the Japanese developer work on the next iteration. For Metal Gear Solid, do you think that there might be a similar approach? Because there's no shade to Silent Hill. Metal Gear Solid is probably the biggest gaming IP that Konami holds in their hands. And with that, 100%. Maybe you'd want to double down or triple down on it in the way that those rumors are talking about Silent Hill. So do you think it is, hey, let's remake Metal Gear Solid 3, let's also maybe remake Metal Gear Solid 1, and let's maybe make Metal Gear Solid 6. I feel like that's the most far-fetched thing.
Do
you think there's any possibility that we ever get a game titled Metal Gear Solid 6?
Man, if we do, I don't know. It's just Metal Gear is such a Kojima thing that it's his voice. It's really his vision. And so I don't know how anyone can capture that. They have to do something kind of that branches off in terms of direction and really kind of, they cannot imitate Kojima. You know what I mean? Like, it's just not possible. He just has a very unique way of directing and just thinking that comes across through his work. It's like an artist's signature. You just know when it's that artist's work. And so to try to replicate that would be, I think, it would just come off as somebody trying to be like a Kojima wannabe. So
it'd be so insincere, right? Like everything, you know, whether you love or hate a Kojima game, like it is 100% him and his vision, right? And it's when somebody gets in the way of that vision, as we saw with Metal Gear Solid 5, that problems arise. And so my whole thing as a fan and what I want out of Metal Gear is the remakes actually don't get me super excited unless they were going to come at it and say, hey, we're Final Fantasy VII remaking this, where it's like, we're doing it and it's starting from a very specific, a similar place, but this is its own story. We're going its own path. We're doing that. But even then, I feel like, you know, Final Fantasy VII didn't have the baggage that this is going to have. Coming to a Metal Gear Solid game and not having Hideo Kojima is going to be a huge problem, right?
Yeah.
So best case scenario, I think it is that you go in there and you have them make a new game, and it can be, we're calling it Metal Gear Solid, and it's going to be, you know, Solid Snake.
Reboot or,
exactly. Yeah. And he's infiltrating Shadow Moses, but like that, and like, you know, we'll use the same, you know, antagonist, Vulcan Raven and such, and obviously Liquid and so on and so forth. But like, it's a reimagining, it's a revision of all that, and it's not going to. But even then, I feel like you get so hung up on the same kind of stuff that we'd all be looking for, the DARPA chief and Gray Fox,
right
down the line.
What if you did it in a way where it was Metal Gear? And something that's not solid, right? Let's say Metal Gear Amorphous. I was going to say Gas, but Gas is not as cool. Metal Gear Amorphous, right? And it is not the characters, you know. It is, here's an entirely new cast of characters. We are sticking with the Metal Gear IP, but to get away, to like separate ourselves from the Kojima comparisons and the Kojima vision, we are leaning into the tactical espionage gameplay that you know, with an entirely different story that is still rooted in war and Metal Gears and crazy powers and all this stuff.
God, it's tough, man.
It's really tough.
It's like, no matter what direction they go with, because Kojima isn't on board, people are always going to be on some level skeptical that they can like capture what Metal Gear is, because it is so distinct to how Kojima just like is creatively. I feel like, and you know, remakes have been making a resurgence as of late. Resident Evil has been doing really well with their remakes. So I feel like they're probably initially going to play it safe and go with remakes, because that's going to make fans happy. It's Kojima's story, his vision, but like touched up. But after that, if they follow up with a Metal Gear Solid 6 or a Metal Gear Solid reboot, it's, you know, after Metal Gear Survive, that was our first foray into Metal Gear.
Without
him. And, you know, they basically took his work, his engine, his like gameplay framework, and then like kind of tried to make something else out of it. But it's like they didn't understand that those mechanics don't quite work with that kind of gameplay. Those mechanics were specifically designed for the kind of Metal Gear Solid 5 style stealth gameplay, not for like a zombie shooter type of thing. So it's like, if there's that level of like fundamental misunderstanding of like what Metal Gear should be, I'm always going to be worried that they're never going to be able to really pull it off. But I hope they can. I really hope they can.
And that's one of my things where I think you're so... There's such a very specific path to doing a remake that makes it okay. Because if Konami just comes out and like, we are remaking Metal Gear Solid 3, and we get the trailer, and you know it's Boss and it's Big Boss, and and it's like we're all like watching the cinematic and the flower petals, and we're having a great time with it. That'll be great until we get it, and then it's going to be that, oh, there's a bunch of weird things here, or even if it's not weird, like, Hideo Kojima's silence on it would be deafening. Mm-hmm. And it would be such a bastardization of his work to be like, all right, cool, we don't work with him anymore, but we've taken his story and all his characters and all the stuff, and we're remaking them, but we're making creative changes. And it'd be like, I feel like it would be there's such personal creations that it would be such a violation that I think there'd be such a snapback on the internet of like, why? I don't want this. I can't do this. And then the well is poisoned.
Yeah, for me, it depends on which studio is working on it. There's certain studios where I'm like, okay, I trust that they are like, like if Bluepoint got to make a Metal Gear, they did Demon's Souls remake, and I thought they freaking nailed that. They didn't like mess too much with the formula, but they made it look gorgeous, modernized some things. Shadow Colossus remake, I think, was the right kind of remake, keeping the essence of the original. So I feel like Bluepoint understands what, I think they could do good work with a Metal Gear Solid remake, a 3 remake or 1 remake. But the 3 remake is being rumored to be made by Virtuous, and I don't know much about them. So yeah. I'd be a little skeptical until I see a trailer or something. So if they license that out to the right studio, maybe they can earn my confidence there. But
it's just such a weird thing. I think for me, I'm right there with you, Yong, of like, the way to do this and do it right, and I've said it for a long time, and so I know I'm a broken record, and this is more when because Kojima and Konami don't get along so much, but if PlayStation was able to go, all right, Konami, license us the IP or make a deal with us, and what we're going to do is we're going to have Bluepoint work on the remake and have Hideo be executive producer.
That's it.
It's because that's what you need, is you need him, even if it's just a rubber seal of approval, whatever, but you need it to be that, like, all right, cool, like, he's not going to, this isn't, I can't imagine him having nothing to do with a remake and watching this remake happen. And then like what his reaction on Twitter would be and or in Instagram and everything else of just like, what a nightmare situation for him to have left under such bad terms and then have. And it's like, yeah, maybe the studio is great. Maybe they're not, but it's damned if you do, damned if you don't. Like it's almost, I think it's similar to Sony Bend doing Golden Abyss, right? Where it's like, well, guess what? You're never going to be Naughty Dog. And so already people are going to say that Uncharted Golden Abyss sucks. And then you have, you know, you're working behind the eight ball on a new platform and yada, yada, yada. It's the same thing of Arkham Origins, right? Of like, okay, cool. Well, you're not Rocksteady. And this isn't part of their Batman trilogy. Right. So it's already lesser then. And it's the same thing here of like, well, you're making a Kojima game. You don't have Hideo working on it. You don't have his approval. And even if you're making something that is good, this isn't going to work for people.
He needs to be there at least as like, just an overseer of sorts who isn't directly involved with the project, but is kind of like consulting at least a little bit here and there, or, you know, just like have his name attached on some level where he's at least able to provide.
Like, I don't know if an executive consultant has ever been a thing, but I would figure that, that's what he would come through and his role would be. Because the vibe I get from Kojima is that he doesn't want to continue working on Metal Gear. It seems like he's been trying to get out of Metal Gear ever since like Metal Gear, I think like 3 or so. It seems like he's been trying to wrap it up.
But it was like Sakurai, right? Where it was like, this is my last one. This is my last one. Well, now I've got a great idea. Now I want to do this thing. Now
it's like, back and make more.
You look at Sakurai, right? And he gets to have like Smash Ultimate and literally be like, this was everything and now I'm done. And then you look at Kojima and Metal Gear Solid 5 and it's like, well, I didn't even get to the last act I wanted to tell of this game.
Kojima, but I wonder, go ahead.
Oh, see, I wonder how much he was burnt by Metal Gear Solid 5 also, though. Like, during that moment, you know, like, I remember all the articles that were, one, trying to theorize what the fuck was going on between Kojima and Konami, and then the reports that were, oh, yeah, they locked him in a room. Oh, yeah, they told him no. Oh, man, they have such a bad relationship, and I wonder if there is scarring with him in the franchise to some extent. I know, like, he still tweets about Metal Gear. Like, I remember when we were doing our Metal Gear Solid playthrough for Twitch, there was like a tweet that I think Mike made that Kojima actually retweeted about, I think it was Metal Gear Solid 3. And so he's not totally, you know, disillusioned or whatever about the franchise.
But that took a long time.
That did take a while.
Because I mean, when I went to RTX Australia with him and they were like, we're giving Greg and Hideo a 2 hour long one-on-one panel, and I was like, let's fucking go. And like, we've known each other a long time, so I mean, we bullshit around, but we didn't bullshit about the panel at all. So literally on stage, I get through the preamble, yada yada, and I ask him a question about Konami or whatever, and he's just like, I don't want to talk about that. And I was like, are you serious? Like, we have a lot to, I can't stretch, because at this point it was like two trailers for Death Stranding. I'm like, I can't stretch Death Stranding for 2 hours. Right, and we got to a place where he was okay talking about it, but it was very top level and it was very factual. And we went out and I was like, damn, like, it wasn't a good spot for him for a while there, I think.
Yeah.
And I think now, you know, time heals all wounds and you get some distance. And I'd like to think that the people who were really horrible to him at Konami have left or whatever, but I don't think it's as bad blood as it used to be.
Yeah. He like recently tweeted about like Metal Gear Solid 4 soundtrack and how he goes back to it every once in a while to listen to it, and how, you know, and I like retweeted and said, yeah, no, it's one of the best soundtracks out there. But yeah, I feel like maybe hopefully wounds are healing enough where he's willing to kind of come out of the Metal Gear shell a little bit. I know he like before MGS5 came out, he at one point threw out the idea of like, I initially had the idea of making a Metal Gear Solid story revolving around the boss in World War II, but I felt the team was too young to tackle that at the time, and so we decided to go this direction. That, I feel like that maybe would have been...
That's the type of stuff I want. Like, that's the type... Because I do... It, as far as Solid Snake slash Big Boss's story, the one game I think that's left to make for that would be connecting the dots from Metal Gear Solid 5 all the way up to Metal Gear Solid 1. Like, I know we have the Metal Gear games, but
yeah,
those are so old and those are classic and most people haven't played those. I think tying up the loose ends that were left in 5 and then lead that in into Metal Gear Solid 1. And that could even be Metal Gear 1 and 2 remakes
yeah,
if they want those to be. You know, I think that would be such a strong send-off for the big boss in the Solid Snake story. And then from there, I think branch off and, tell the stories of the boss or tell stories of the other characters that are in the universe or find a new character to tell. And maybe that can then, in the way that Greg is, that you guys are talking about, like, bringing in Kojima to maybe work with Bluepoint as in a consultant role or in some kind of, like, you know, lead role on the project, then have Kojima pass the baton and be like, cool, this is the person that I'm letting take charge of this thing. I trust them. I have left them with my knowledge and have it be this.
He needs his Dave Filoni, like George Lucas did with Dave Filoni. He needs that level of, like, I'm giving you the Metal Gear Bible, essentially.
Yes.
100%.
And I trust this person. And if you're a fan, you should trust this person. And then they go on and they make the boss game or they make other games that they can make.
Metal Gear, I'd call it Metal Gear Solid Zero. Like, it'd be like the origin. Because, like, the boss is kind of where everything starts. Her death is what triggers the split between Zero and Big Boss, the interpretation of the will. Yeah, she is ground zero of this whole conflict that kind of goes through, you know, ages and becomes this whole legacy thing. So that's my dream game. And the boss is my personal favorite character in the whole series. She's such a freaking badass and like that.
And she's not explored enough.
No, nowhere near enough. And I feel like I want to see what makes her tick, what made her who she is today.
And see, that would be a fascinating and not easy, but interesting way to do this and not offend everyone.
Yes.
And in the same way, I think you could get away with, if you really wanted to, like, I think you could, if I was Konami and I wanted to get back into Metal Gear and I didn't want gamers to hate me, even though I'm sure they don't care because they're getting the money, right? Like, I could easily see it being, all right, cool, like you guys were just talking about. All right, remake Metal Gear. Take the story of Metal Gear and let's start there, and you start we take that as a jumping off point and go, because, you know, obviously Metal Gear and Metal Gear 2 and all that all leads to Metal Gear Solid and where we are, but since those games are so basic graphically and the story is so not basic, but it's more of just a scripted thing, right? It's like, you know, it's, I always call it an NES game, and I know it started elsewhere, but it's just easier for me. It's an NES game, right? Like, I feel like that would be a great boilerplate jump off. Let's go there. And then you start with those stories and make your own Metal Gear. You build your own Metal Gear universe that way.
Yeah. Yeah. There are a number of avenues Konami can pursue, but it's all about that execution and, you know, whether they can find the right team. And I hope they don't do it internally, because I feel like when Konami licenses out stuff, things turn out good. Like Castlevania turning into a Netflix series, that turned out great. That was amazing. I love that they did that, and we got a great show out of it, and it's continuing with, like, I think Richter Belmont or so it's like that's going well. Hopefully Silent Hill, you know, will be successful, and I hope Konami can, like, come back and, like, win us back. Really, that's what I want. I don't want them to. They have such treasure troves of IPs under their umbrella that
they're wasting.
They're
just sitting there. It's the way that a few weeks ago, we were talking about Fallout with Bethesda and how, you know, they said that, oh yeah, Fallout is coming after Elder Scrolls, the next one. And I was like, bro, that is 15 years from now. Yeah. And, like, you know, the point I made on that, it was a KHD with, I think it was me, Barrett, and Jane. And I was like, I don't think that's the next Fallout I play. Right. I think somebody's going to make a Fallout spinoff that they license out, because you don't sit on an IP like that for 15 years and have it do nothing. Metal Gear Solid is, I can't believe they've been sitting on that IP for even this long. Right. I know Survive came out in what, 2018, but we don't count that. Like, that didn't sell Metal Gear numbers. Right. So Metal Gear Solid 5 came out in 2015. That's 7 years and you're not making a mainline Metal Gear Solid. Do you know how much money you're sitting on? And like, it's Konami, and they're making money elsewhere.
I was going to say, their most profitable year without it. What are they?
Yu-Gi-Oh! And
But even still, it's like, license that out. Like, you can still make some revenue off of that.
And again, that's the other easy avenue. It's like, if it was, license it out and get it to play. Like, as long as it was, like, not Konami making it, there'd be such a dodge. And again, I'm probably getting way too wrapped up in the, man, everybody hates Konami. Because, the 100% of people that buy the next Metal Gear game, 8% of them know that Konami and Kojima had a bad breakup. Like,
yeah,
Poe, like, doesn't 3%, fucking know. Poe's, like, excited for a new Metal Gear, and he's gonna buy a new Metal Gear.
Who would you give the next Metal Gear game to? And not talking about remake at this point, because I think we have that kind of settled, right? Virtuous is probably making 3, and like if we had to choose somebody who, to make another Metal Gear remake, right? Blue Point, I think, is the studio.
Yeah.
But when we're talking about Metal Gear 6 or Metal Zero or whatever the new iteration, the new ideas for Metal Gear are, is there someone you'd want to take that over?
That's a great question.
A Patreon member over in the live chat over on patreon.com/kindoffunnygames.
Oh, we call them Trogs.
Trogs. My dog Nick 96, frequent write-in for things, says Yoko Taro. And I want that so bad. Because that
Yoko
would be,
Taro. That'd be interesting.
That'd be dope.
That'd be, I think you would knock that out the park from a story perspective. Gameplay, actually, you know what? I think I'd be down to see it. If Yoko Taro had the right team to like put together the stealth systems and like the stuff, the unique details gameplay-wise that makes Metal Gear click, I would really enjoy seeing that. Because Yoko Taro, I think, philosophically has a lot of really fascinating ideas that I could see overlapping with Metal Gear in a really cool way. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, like Nier Automata was as good as it was because they went with Platinum to do the gameplay, but Yoko Taro was the mastermind of the story. Yes. But like you play the original Nier, it's just
Replicant,
called Nier actually.
Just
Replicant, yeah. I love the story, but the gameplay was just so bland, and that's the area where he falters. It's the gameplay, he just doesn't know how to really fully develop. So if he could get a studio that specializes in stealth and like him be kind of the overseer of the plot and all these things, it could be fascinating. Like he'd take this in a weird place. Like if there's one person who thinks, you know, weirder than Kojima, it's Yoko Taro, you know what I mean? Like he goes
1,000 places.
Yeah. I think that'd be an interesting match. God, who else though, man? It's so hard to think about who could actually.
Totally.
It's interesting too, because you know, you bring up like he'd take it interesting places and make it weird and blah blah. And it's like, what defines Metal Gear, right? And everybody plays these games, gets caught up on something different. Whether it's the stealth action, whether it's the story, whether it's the weirdness, whether it's the mechs, you know, and like, who has got that all under wraps? Like, who can you point to and not be like, oh, this is perfect?
I would be. I don't think this is ever going to happen, but I'd be fascinated to see what Naughty Dog could do.
That was the answer I was going to give.
Because they could add what they do so well is like the nuances and the dialogue and the performances. And that Metal Gear lacks some nuance. It's very like in your face, you know what I mean? And if you could add
the Lilo.
Before we engage in this boss battle, let me tell you my backstory and tell you about the philosopher's legacy. Kuwabara. I think Naughty Dog could add that nuance, and they have done some stealth.
Last of Us Part 2, man. Crawling through the tall grass, coming up on Ezeli, choking people
survival,
out.
Survival, you know, it's like there's
a Western-made Metal Gear Solid would be very fascinating.
It would be fascinating. Would they go like, because Metal Gear has to have some element of that like Kojima weirdness, craziness in there too, though. Can Naughty Dog kind of do their own version of that? Alongside the new,
I don't even know. At that point, I don't know, but I think it would have to be something different. I think the boss story being done by Naughty Dog could be could be really fascinating, because at that point, right, you're going back into time. You are probably like what, maybe 15 years before Metal Gear Solid 3, I'd imagine, and you're having, maybe it is young Snake being trained up by, I forget if he was trained up by, if Big Boss was trained up by the boss. Oh, no, he was. That was the whole story. You have
I don't know if they knew each other.
I forget what their relationship was. I forget if that was their whole relationship. But you have that, right? You could even have, like, because Ocelot is always all over these Metal Gear games.
Yeah.
Ocelot is the actual one I was thinking of. I forget when they split.
Toddler Ocelot is a...
Yeah.
He's there.
He's there. And you know they love to do that shit. At least Kojima loves to do that shit.
Yeah.
But I think that would have such a different energy to it that I think you could get away with Naughty Dog doing it and giving it the Naughty Dog flair and have it feel like a thing that doesn't feel inappropriate for what the story is.
And I mean, when you look at the boss's backstory, you hear about how she gave birth to Ocelot in the middle of war. She had like a C-section. Yeah. That's how she got that scar. And like, I don't know, it'd be fascinating to see like how they get to that point and how they make that, I don't know, thematically and symbolically and thematically like relevant to everything else, whatever the story could end up being. I think Naughty Dog could do something really interesting with that, but
Naughty Dog's like
too busy.
Always, exactly. For always sure. The shoe in, I think, for anything you're like dream project wise that you want to see them do, at least around here, right? And I'm right there with you, especially with what we just talked about of the story of the boss, of the her giving birth in the battlefield, of all that happening, like. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that would be incredible. And if it was like obviously the hyper realized Last of Us Part 2 gameplay and visuals and acting and everything else
with their engine, man. Yeah,
but here's one for you, and this is very different from everything we just talked about in terms of what we're looking for and why. But We're trying to figure out how to do Metal Gear, who to give it to, who can get away with stuff and do it right, in quote unquote, right? Mm. And so obviously I think of it episodically, or maybe even chapter by chapter, right? Obviously there's a backbone overarching for whatever the story they're trying to tell, but it really is about sending Boss, Big Boss, Solid Snake, whoever it is, whoever our protagonist is going to be, you know, riding, it goes on, out on missions, right? And so it is very much like you're starting the mission, your objective is to go through and do this stuff. Not like short VR missions, there's story and there's beats there, but it's not even necessarily the backbone isn't showing up like in your face as you go. It is very much like episodes of 24 or whatever as you go and do it. And what if IO Interactive was making it? Like, I think IO doing a thing that wasn't like they would need help probably with the story. And I'm not trying to talk shit about IO Interactive at all, whatever, right? But I think if you went and put a giant thing on them and had it be like, cool, you are going out on missions. You are, this is, we're filling in the backstory of, you know, Jack. We're filling in who, you know, whatever, that you're going out and doing these Metal Gear missions that will eventually lead to a big Metal Gear fight, of course, and but maybe even lead to smaller bosses as you go through and do this. But it is about stealthing, it is about sneaking, it is about, you know, actually getting out there.
IO specializes in sandbox stealth gameplay, where it's like, it's you got all these tools. What do you want to do? Do whatever you want. What do you want to start? Do you want to start here? Do you want to start here? What tools do you want to bring with you? And yeah, I guess their specialty has been like the replayability. Like Hitman is not a, like the latest Hitman trilogy. It's, those are not long games. It's more of like what you continue to unlock and makes you think of like, oh, I want to try this now with this level. And in that sense, like very MGS5-esque, where like you keep upgrading Mother Base and unlocking all these new tools, and you kind of want to maybe like replay a mission to see like, okay, now I got this like sniper rifle that I didn't have back then. What can I do with that? So that the gameplay,
you're trying to go back and S rank those missions, like we all do.
Exactly. So it I could see it. Yeah. I think they would need help on story and stuff. That's one area where like they're not terrible at it. It's just like it's just fine. I don't know.
It's not only they're not terrible at it. I don't think their games before have called for it. So you really don't know what chops they have in it because obviously it's just been Agent 47.
I got to the end of Hitman 3 and they were doing some like really intense story stuff with like flashbacks and like visions of like what's going on, what's been going on for all the three Hitman games. Yeah. And as I was going through it, I was like, I don't remember a thing. I don't recall any of this. And I played I played every single level of Hitman 1 through 3. And I was like, I don't fucking know. This story has never grabbed me in that way.
Yeah, with Kojima, it's like everything is just thematically relevant. The characters are there for a specific reason and it's all like sometimes they hammer on the themes a little too much, but it's not just like there's this big conspiracy, you know, uncover the whatever. It's like there's a message behind every Metal Gear game.
And also like every crumb is something in the Kojima games, you know, like that. I was going through it. I was listening to a recap of all of Metal Gear. I only made it halfway. I made it up until like modern Metal Gear, but it was starting from a bit before 3 all the way up until the end of Metal Gear Solid 5. Mm-hmm. And there are so many different names and organizations and characters and connections between characters that are thrown out there that I forgot about, and I forget how important they are. Like they started talking about, actually I listened a little bit past halfway because they brought up philanthropy at one point and I was like, fuck yeah, philanthropy was a thing. And that was just Metal Gear Solid 2, right? For like not even that, maybe a part of Metal Gear Solid 2 where they talk about Solid Snake and Otacon coming together and trying to wipe out all the Metal Gears and that being their thing. And it's like, dude, that is one organization, let alone the Patriots, let alone the like the number, like, XOF, Fox, the Cobra unit, like the list goes on.
Foxhound.
Like there's so many different things to attach yourself to it lore wise in Metal Gear. And it's all very fascinating stuff.
It is.
And finding somebody who can do that, or finding a team that could do that in story and narrative. Oh, that's difficult.
That's the thing, again, where we all grab different parts of it. And I feel like, you know, we all wear the hat differently, especially, you know, Timur Hussein or whatever, of like, oh, I'm a Metal Gear super fan. What that means to you is different than everything else. But it was like, two weeks ago, I tweeted out, I'll never fry an egg and not think of Metal Gear Solid 4. And Dan Reichert responded and goes, I think of Metal Gear Solid 4 every time I'm transporting the convulsing corpse of my former U.S. president clone brother, disguised as the corpse of my clone dad, across Europe until a vampire throws him in a boat fuel fire. And I'm like, I remember I was reading that. I'm like, that did fucking happen. I don't even like it. That is real. That is a real thing that happened in this game series. Right. Fuck.
My answer to the question of who I would give it to, I kind of go back to what we're talking about with Silent Hill, with the rumors that you have these different studios working on different versions of this. For in my head, this version of Metal Gear would be more so like the, hey, let's find a smaller developer, give them the IP, and let's see how they go crazy with it. And my answer there would be Suda51. Like, I want to see, I'd like to see what Suda51 would do with a, hey, make a smaller Metal Gear that is separate, that, you know, people aren't judging as a mainline thing, but take it, go wild with it. Because I think the thing that I love Suda51 for is how he tackles characters. No More Heroes in particular has such a good cast of villains, right? The whole point of the game is that you are playing as Travis Touchdown, working his way through the rankings of the top 10 assassins in the world. And each assassin has their own personality. They have their own gimmick. They have their own rants they go on. They do the thing where, at least in No More Heroes 1, they call you up right before the boss battle. Or not them, but like the French lady calls you up right before the boss battle and goes on like basically like a poem of like talking about the, oh, this is the Garden of Chaos or whatever the fuck. And then you hang up and then you go into the boss fight. And it has those rituals that you'd expect out of a, oh, you beat a boss. They go on the spiel about their backstory, like in Metal Gear Solid 4. Like Suda does that kind of stuff in his games. And him tackling a, let's say it's a Raiden story taking place between 2 and 4 of like how you get to Robot Raiden. And he's facing off against a new villain unit that we've never heard of. I would love to see Suda51's take
That'd
on a Metal
awesome.
Gear.
That's a great pitch.
Yeah.
I hope to, one of my like dream gameplay scenarios for Metal Gear Solid 6 or 0, if it's focused on the boss, would be the Metal Gear Solid 5 buddy system where you bring along like D-Dog or Quiet. Yeah. I thought that was so incredibly well done, where it gives you this additional tool to, you know, do you want to have a sniper on the side who can like shoot a guy while you shoot another guy? Do you want to have D-Dog there to like stealth his way and like take one guy out while you take another guy out? But expand upon that with the Cobra unit in Metal Gear Solid 6, where you have the End, who's the sniper. You got the Pain, who the weirdo dude. You got the Pain is who's the guy with the bees? That's the Pain.
That's the Pain.
He shoots bees or whatever. I don't know. Distracts enemies that way. I don't know. You could use each Cobra unit's specific specialities to strategize, like, and to command them on the fly while you, as the boss, kind of go in there and do your thing. Like, I don't know. That would be incredible.
You mean like in a Mega Man way where you beat the boss and then you get their ability?
No, I mean like in the sense of like actually like being able to command the Cobra unit, same way you could command the buddies in Metal Gear Solid 5. Yeah, or like not necessarily XCOM, but like more like live gameplay. Like in Metal Gear Solid 5, you could literally like bring up the wheel and then tell Quiet to shoot the guy. And then and then you'll hear her like do a little singing and then she'll shoot and then you can shoot the other guy. You can literally like coordinate with your buddy. But if you expand that with the Cobra unit's abilities, I don't know, could that
have happy tears if they made that game that you're talking about, like a Metal Gear Solid 3 from maybe the boss's perspective, and it is, hey, here's the, like, you get to partner up with the End and like command how the End takes out his enemies. That would be that would be my favorite game of all time.
So like if there's a studio out there who specializes in that kind of like being able to control your squad members kind of thing, that'd be
they had that in Far Cry, right? Have Ubisoft. Well,
that's
not
true, right? The animals or whatever, and
your little buddies.
Far Cry 5, So I don't know. That's like my personal dream scenario, and a studio who could tackle that would certainly gain my praise.
When you're bringing, just in general for everything to talk about, what are the likelihood that David Hayter comes back?
I don't think it's a small chance. I think there's a good chance he'll come back.
I think it really depends on the project and the scope.
That's true. And like,
if you're starting from scratch, no way. Sure, doing a remake that you want to try to be as faithful as and try to get people on your side, sure.
Yeah. If they're branching off and starting their own soft reboot and like introducing a new character, then he's out. But
has there been word from him about like how he feels regarding coming back? Because I know like with 5, they replaced him with Kiefer Sutherland.
And
that didn't go super well with the audience. No. And I don't know. I forget if there was any quotes from him being like, "Oh man, I wanted to do that," but
there was hella drama about it. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, I do remember him though. Like, I don't remember when, but I think it was fairly recent, saying like, "No, like I would come back if I got the offer." It's not like I have so much bad blood surrounding it that like I'm like, "Fuck Snake, I'm done with this."
He does like the not Fiverr, maybe it is Fiverr, like the cameos. He does the cameos as Snake, right?
Yeah, he still does.
So he has like some connection with the character still. Like it seems like he likes playing that character.
I don't know if you guys have seen the claps of my ass cheeks keeps eluding guards or whatever.
Yeah, I have seen that.
Yeah, there's like he still like loves like doing the character, so I don't feel like he'd resent coming back just because of that past drama. And Yeah, I don't know. That whole situation was weird. Because there are elements of Kiefer that I did like. But the way he handled it, it's just the way he just didn't even
The marketing of it. Yeah. I don't know how you get around like the nature of Kiefer Sutherland and Metal Gear Solid 5. Like it's tough because he will have such that connection of David Hayter to Snake, and it's hard to be like, nah, man, like just trust us, like this is gonna work out, you know? Because like I thought it was fine. Like every time he opened his mouth, it was a little bit weird, but also he was silent the whole game. Like he wasn't saying much. You didn't really need David Hayter in that role.
Yeah.
And I hated it. Period. Mm-hmm. It's like I get it, and I want everybody to have the creative freedom and whatever the hell they want to do.
I get it too.
But like, as a fan, and as like being that deep into Metal Gear for that long, and when that got announced, it was like, what? And then the fact that it was bad and it wasn't pretty on, you know, to hear it from David Hayter's perspective and yada yada yada. And then of course, you finish the game. Spoilers, right? Like it's not Snake, so it's like, it's not Big Boss, it's not Naked Snake. You're like, oh. Okay, but it's like the way the entire thing happened, it was so clear that like Kojima had never told David Hayter, like, hey, it's actually not you, so that's why I'm not doing it, but I won't say that so we can play.
Yeah,
like it was very much like he just finds out he's not this character, and he was like, oh, that's
how much of it felt like it was written around just wanting to get a Hollywood actor in there, you know?
I think that was more of it. I don't think it was a choice on Kojima's part that he was like, you know what, I'm gonna do this whole swerve because it's, you know, not actually him. I don't think that was it. I think it was that I can do this, and I want to work with more established voice talent and all these different things, and not they weren't in the same place they were when they did Metal Gear Solid.
Yeah,
I think it not being Big Boss kind of gave him the opportunity to like kind of get away with it easier, as opposed to like if it was truly Big Boss.
Yeah,
you might have a harder time justifying replacing David Hayter.
Yeah, but here's the thing: Big Boss does show up at the very end of the game, and he's voiced by Kiefer. So it's like if David, you know, came in just for a couple lines, I mean, that would have been true. That would have done it for me. That would have justified it. But the fact that it's all still ultimately Kiefer, even Big Boss, I'm like, all right. So they just, it was just, it
what
was
a wild reveal that was.
Part of me was like a little hyped because I am a fan of Kiefer. I was a huge fan of 24 growing up and stuff like that. So like there was an element of me that's like, that's kind of cool. But there was the other side of me was like, but it's David Hayter is Snake. Like there's just unquestionable. That's just an unquestionable thing. Like he's just. You can't imagine anyone else playing the part. Like Kiefer really didn't feel 100% like Snake to me. He did a good job with what he had with the
for sure,
but he wasn't Snake. And even as Big Boss, he didn't really feel like Big Boss because
that's fair.
There's just such a specific cadence and voice to who Snake is, and David Hayter's the only one who can really like fully deliver
Metal
that 100%.
Metal Gear.
Colonel.
I asked the audience on patreon.com/kindoffunnygames what they want from the future of Metal Gear, and I was shocked by the answers because they weren't what I'd normally expect, right? My dog Nick 96 from Massachusetts wrote in and said, first off, free Metal Gear Solid 4 from prison, whether that's through PlayStation Plus extra premium services or a native remaster for the current hardware. It's a great point. It's ridiculous that you still can't play that game.
And now you really can't play
like a month ago. That's the thing. Like we played it through PS Now. That's how we streamed it for my first time, and then through this new PS Plus thing, it's not there anymore. Like they lost that deal or whatever. So that's it's so.
We did the KFGD. There was like a story a month ago where PlayStation on PlayStation blog put out the list of games on the premium service, and it wasn't a full list. But on KFGD, we were like, I don't think Metal Gear Solid 4 is going to be on here. I think Metal Gear Solid 4 is not going to be playable on modern consoles anymore.
Yeah.
And people were like, you're freaking out. Don't
everybody doubted me when I was like, you're not going to get the same list of PS3 games that you did on PS Now as you're going to get. And they're like, no, Barrett, it's going to be the same exact service. No, motherfuckers. No. They lied.
Lo and behold. Yeah, no, it sucks. And I think the hope... And this, like, I don't know where, like, I think the hope is really placed in just like everybody feeling lost right now in terms of what to do with their emotions. Like, the hope is that you get Metal Gear Solid 4 in some kind of Metal Gear Solid collection. Like,
Simba Jones writes into patreon.com/kindoffunnygames and says, as someone who has not played any Metal Gear Solid 5 any Metal Gear Solid besides 5, people tell me it's the worst one story wise. I would like a way to download and play the series on my PS5. Do we think that this is in the foreseeable future, either through ports, remasters, or remakes? What's preventing these games from coming forward, or why doesn't Sony seem to care?
I bet Sony cares because they'd like to get the money off it. It's Konami. And the fact that they're not re-upped on this PlayStation Now deal or whatever for streaming Metal Gear Solid 4 gives me hope.
Yeah.
That, yes, they are like, you know what? How do we do this? We're going to remake 3, but we can't piss off everybody, but we can't have Kojima. All right, hold on. We will put out the Ultimate Collection, all the Kojima games in one thing, ready to go on regular console, on normal consoles, and then also we will start our own thing. And the classics are there, and you can play them wherever you want to, but also, here you go.
There are rumors that, like, it's the same Video Games Chronicle article that talked about the Silent Hill stuff and the Metal Gear Solid remake stuff. Like, they also said, we also heard that they are planning to remaster all of the previous games into, like, you know, current generation consoles and stuff. So I feel like that's also a matter of when, not if. I feel like that's definitely happening at some point. I don't know how long it'd take. And especially, like, if they're planning to include 4 in that collection, that really have to, because you know, the whole, it's just so, it's such an incompatible game because of the whole cell processor and how just architecturally different.
And there's like just a lot of stuff that's very PS3 specific in that game, like in turn, like the transition from chapter to chapter. I remember vividly the loading screens of like Snake smoking you're seeing the PlayStation 3 loading thing. I don't think they had that on PlayStation Now though, right? Like, Bear, you didn't see those when we were doing the playthrough.
What the,
like, I'm usually between chapters, there would be like an installation screen of smoke of old snake smoking a cigar.
Oh,
and the game will be like, take a break or whatever. Like,
I don't think it had those.
So maybe that's not as big of an issue. But yeah, there are definitely. But aside from that, there are still a lot of built-in, like, no, this is made for the PS3. Type stuff in there that they would have to work around.
There's even a joke where, oh, Snake, swap out the disc. Wait a minute, we're on PlayStation 3. We don't need to do that here.
Yeah, exactly. And they had like a lot of iPod stuff in there too that I forgot about. That I'm sure they could not. They probably had to take out that licensing.
Right.
Yeah, they've done it before. Remember, I've seen how when all the stuff goes from Mountain Dews or whatever to just being regular ass drinks and all that.
Oh, and Death Stranding, like the.
Oh, yeah, it was Monster Energy drink, and then it became just generic. You know,
that was a jump scare for me because I didn't know that happened, and so I started playing it on Steam Deck. And Norman Reedus sits down by his bed, and you see the cans, and I'm like, "Where's the monster? I like the monster.
I need my monster. Monster.
Yeah, I need my monster. I don't want this fucking Bridges energy drink.
Yeah, whatever. Like, yeah."
Ryan Poala Higgins writes into patreon.com/kindoffunnygames just like you can and says, I'd love to see a VR Metal Gear Solid. The first person's perspective of Metal Gear Solid would suit VR. The pressure of hiding inside boxes while being chased would be brilliant. Also, having a Metal Gear Solid HUD in VR would be amazing.
I would love to, that's an experiment I'd love to see somebody take on. I think that could be fascinating. VR is great for stealth games. And there's that immersion factor of just actually being there. VR missions.
And that's VR, another way. How do we, you know? How do we make more money from Metal Gear without offending every? Oh, VR missions.
Right, VR missions.
More VR missions. Sure.
Yeah. No, I'd be super down for that. But as long as you give it to the right studio who knows, like, exactly, understands the gameplay and all that stuff. Yeah.
Ladies and gentlemen, that's it. That's what we think's next for Metal Gear Solid. What? Something. Nobody knows what, but I believe the rumors that they're working on remakes. I believe that Konami wants to make as much. I mean, they're doing NFTs of Castlevania, right? Like, and everything else. Like, they want to make money off this IP, and they're not going to sit on it forever.
License it out. That's the best course
give
of
it
action.
To me.
Yeah, give it to someone who can do it justice.
Speaking of making money, ladies and gentlemen, we have a site called patreon.com/kindoffunnygames. On patreon.com/kindoffunnygames, you can go there, kick us a few bucks, get each and every episode of the shows ad-free. You can get them with the exclusive post-show we do. You can be watching them live as we record them, just like my dog Nick96, Omega Buster, and Josh494R. Of course, though, you might not be able to go to Patreon, and we understand that. That just means you have to hear from our sponsors. And speaking of, here they are. This podcast is brought to you by something Tim literally uses every day. AG1. Tim's birthday is June 30th, and he decided to give himself the gift of taking care of his body with AG1. With one delicious scoop of AG1, you're absorbing 75 high-quality vitamins, minerals, whole food source, superfoods, probiotics, and adaptogens to help start your day right. This special blend of ingredients supports your gut health, your nervous system, your immune system, your energy, recovery, focus, and aging, all the things! Tim mixes AG1 with his water, loves the taste, taste and says he's feeling better than ever. Athletic Greens has over 7,000 five-star reviews, and Athletic Greens is a climate-neutral certified company. Right now, it's time to reclaim your health and arm your immune system with convenient daily nutrition. It's just one scoop and a cup of water every day. That's it. No need for a million different pills or supplements to look out for your health. To make it easy, Athletic Greens is going to give you a free one-year supply of immune-supporting vitamin D and five free travel packs with your first purchase. All you have to do is visit athleticgreens.com/kindoffunny. Again, that's athleticgreens.com/kindoffunny to take ownership over your health and pick up the ultimate daily nutrition insurance. Blessing, what's happening this week in PlayStation?
Let's start off with some Horizon show news. The crew for Sony's Horizon 2074 TV show includes The Boys and Expanse talent. I'm pulling from Tom Ivan at Video Games Chronicle. The first details about the crew working on Sony's upcoming Horizon TV adaptation have been revealed. As spotted by journalist Jeff Grubb, a list of crew members attached to the project was posted on the Directors Guild of Canada, Ontario's website. The list contains 27 names, including first assistant director Jack Boehm of The Boys, Resident Evil, and Resident Evil Welcome to Raccoon City, and art director Michelle Brady of The Expanse in Saw 2. Sony announced in May that it was working on a TV adaptation of Horizon, which will stream on Netflix. Quote, the show, as pitched right now, is called Horizon 2074, and it'll split its time between the timeline you see in the games and the timeline of when things begin to fall. This is what Jeff Grubb claimed in a recent Giant Bomb video show. Quote, the idea is that this is not a reboot or a remake or sort of reimagining of the game's storyline. It'll take place parallel and sort of explain other elements that happened in the game. End quote. Interesting. Right?
Interesting. Oh, that's a ringing endorsement.
I don't know how I feel about that one. Like, I was looking forward to this to being, like, maybe a retelling. I did not think that this would be, like, an additive, oh, here's more lore like that takes place in the same universe. Like, Yong, how does that strike you?
Huh. I mean, there's so much you can do with the Horizon lore, like, if you know about, you know, the whole Gaia AI system. And there's so many, like, regions in the world, and it'd be interesting to see, like, what other regions are going through, what their struggles are. This feels like it had to be like super high budget. I mean, Horizon, especially after Forbidden 2074, why is it called 20? Is it,
you assume that's where they're gonna go through, that's, it'll be set in that future where Elizabeth is doing all this stuff. I have the timeline pulled up, and shit really starts to go fucking down in the 2065 2066 area right now.
So 2074 would be like sort of building up towards the events.
It might be like the last days for humanity.
They're still like living underground and stuff like that. Like once they've locked themselves away, because that's like one of the incidents, right? Is that Elizabeth leaves one of those facilities to go like essentially sacrifice herself and like plug up a hole
right
wherever she is. So
that could be interesting. Like the kind of the in between of what happened between the games and the origins that they kind of hint at or present to the audience in the games. Yeah, kind of having that chunk really kind of focusing on that and the struggle until the end before the new beginning. That could be fascinating. I would be actually into that idea.
Yeah. I am super into the fall of humanity. So if it is a show that like I don't understand the timeline.
When you say you're super into the fall of humanity, you mean like generally or in Horizon?
No, I mean overall.
So overall.
I mean, don't get me wrong, I'm not stoked to be living in it. It sucks to be living in it. Like that's not the best, but like I am interested in it every day when I wake up and I go closer. We're closer. That's great.
In there.
That's great news. That's great news. In the game for sure. Watching Elizabeth and Ted Farrow and all that, and like I think. I don't know how much to get hung up on the 2047 bit because I wouldn't want it to be like shit's already happened and they're underground. I think it'd be way cooler if it was them and the intrigue in between her and Ted and like them doing, and then the program starts to spiral out of control and then realization of this, and then they are launching the Ark and they're doing all this different stuff trying to figure it out. Like that'd be fun if not horribly depressing.
Yeah, they like touch upon that, but we don't really get to see exactly how everything played out. We kind of have the beats, but we don't have the deep dive into it. And a deep dive into that, I think, actually could be additive for the games and could make for a fascinating show. So I'm actually, I'd be excited for that, depending on like who's making it and like who's on board. But I mean, you said talent from The Boys and The Expanse, right?
Yeah,
I mean, that
The Boys, great show.
Yeah, and I don't know if you've seen The Expanse. It's
I'm awesome. Not seeing The Expanse.
Oh man, you need to watch it. It's so good. It's
like, it seems like it had the right energy if you're transitioning from that to Horizon, right?
Yeah, absolutely. So you know what? I'm hopeful actually about this. This seems really cool.
And again, it's that interesting thing that we always go back and forth with, where do I want to see the same stories retold? Do I want video game did it so well, that person, that actor, or Ashley Birch is Aloy. Blah, 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 what are you gonna do with that? It's an interesting take to be like, all right, cool, we're not gonna do that. At least that's what Jeff Grubb's indicating, right? That like, okay, cool, it's going to be something that's additive to the story and not is running in a parallel to it. That's an interesting thing. It could be obviously done incredibly poorly and not work at all, and yada yada yada. It could not be interesting. It's also a weird one of like, we have Horizon and people are watching the show like, I want to play this game, and you pick it up like,
yeah,
why am I this redheaded lady fighting?
Where's Elizabeth?
It's a different direction from like the Last of Us HBO show, which is kind of a retelling of Last of Us 1, which is also getting a remake. And they're really like redoing Last of Us 1 over and over again. I feel I love Last of Us 1 though. It's also like one of my favorite games. But also like, I guess they've said, I think that they're not just copying the game. They are branching off a little bit and kind of doing their own thing with it. So who knows? Maybe it'll be something fascinating in its own right. But yeah, this the fact that this is additive and something actually different and not just let's just retell the story of the game that we already know kind of makes me a little more excited for this, actually.
Well, we started off this episode talking a little bit about PC. Let's talk more about PC with story number two. Sony is continuing to double down in the PC space. This comes from an article from Shannon Lau at Washington Post. Sony Electronics is launching a gaming gear brand called InZone, aimed at PC gamers. The company announced its new brand on Tuesday with two 27-inch monitors and three variations of gaming headphones. Quote, "We're entering the gaming gear industry with monitors and headsets at an exciting time. Since gaming and esports have gotten even more popular over the last few years," that is Kazuo Kii, Sony president of home entertainment and sounds products, and that's what they told Washington Post. Quote, we're leveraging Sony's high-quality display and audio technologies to deliver products that will allow gamers to immerse themselves into their gaming world, end quote. Admitted latecomers to the PC market, Sony plans to win players over through competitively priced products. Sony plans to sell an $899 4K resolution monitor with 144Hz refresh rate available this summer and a $529 1080p monitor with a 240Hz refresh rate coming later this year. While Sony hopes to woo PC gamers, it hasn't left PS5 users behind. Aesthetically, the monitors and headsets are designed to blend in with the PS5 should users happen to own one. The two monitors work with the PS5, which will optimize screen colors once connected. The monitors also have a switcher feature, allowing users to connect a single keyboard, mouse, and headset to a PC and PS5 at the same time and switch between the two. Greg Miller, how do you feel about this leaning into the PC space?
Go get paid, Sony. It's one of those definitely things where it's a Sony overall thing that affects PlayStation, obviously, because of the PlayStation integration you mentioned there and yada, yada, yada. But it's like so outside of my wheelhouse of like, you know how I am of like, whatever headset I pick up is the headset I'll use. I don't know. I plug them in. I don't have much. I am the guy who's just using the PlayStation 5 dongle headset, right? I'm just like, all right, this works for me. This gets the job done. It's good for playing Fortnite or whatever. I'm not the counting the pixels and doing the things, but it'll be more interesting, I guess, of like, I feel as an outsider who has so many friends who play PC games that the market is kind of dominated, right? By your Razers or whatever, your Logitechs. Like, I feel like there's already so many people entrenched in there when it comes to headsets, when it comes to gaming monitors. Like, is Sony going to come in and be able to throw in such awesome stuff that it's able to get people over there? Is that, the $899 4K monitor a great deal? I don't know. Yong, do you know?
Yeah, I mean, for me, Sony's been investing more in the PC landscape with, just releasing PlayStation exclusive games on PC and stuff like that. So I guess they're just like trying to just double down on that on the hardware space as well. But yeah, I don't know. I'm not too familiar with like Sony hardware. Outside of the console stuff. So yeah, what the output has to be, comparable, if not better than what the competition is doing if they want to kind of make a name for themselves in what is a saturated market. So yeah, there'd have to be something about their products that's just like higher quality, just I don't know, whatever that might be, whatever form that might take. But yeah, I don't know. I'd be interested to follow what kind of hardware they'll put out there. Yeah.
Plus, Young, we don't need it. All right, we have Steam Decks. They're handheld. They got a screen. Right. I don't need it. All right.
But what if you want to cancel out the really loud fan on your Steam Deck?
I mean, I wear headphones with it anyway.
Yeah.
Yeah. Are they canceling it out enough? Okay. Michael Hyman in the other room is hearing the fan. I'm not hearing that. And then we got one more for you. We got PS Plus games announced for July. We're getting Crash Bandicoot 4, It's About Time for PS4 and PS5. The Dark Pictures Anthology, Man of Medan for PS4. And then Arcadageddon for PS5 and PS4. Arcadageddon, I'm looking forward to. That's the Ilfana game that they announced, or they released in early access last year. Played a little bit of it, had fun with, and kind of, I like leaned off it because I was like, all right, let me wait until the final product, because this seems like it has a lot it still needs to do to polish up. But I like the idea of it being this co-op third-person action shooter roguelite, kind of similar to Returnal or Risk of Rain, but doing its very own like Fortnite style, like lean into the fun aspects of it, lean into like having it be this ongoing experience of it. I think Arcadageddon looks really cool. But Greg, did you try out Man of Medan?
Yeah.
Was that your shit?
No, it was not. Remember, this is for me personally, this is the weakest of the Dark Pictures Anthology, the weakest of Supermassive games. So when I saw this, I was actually bummed, because I think Supermassive does such great work with The Quarry. You know, we just did our House of Ashes, Joey's first playthrough. I've played it before. It's my favorite one from Supermassive. And even Little Hope, I thought, was better than Man of Medan. So it was very much one of those of like, if you're going to put one out there, and I understand that you want to make your money off it, and you're Namco Bandai, Bandai Namco, you're going to put it out there. But I was like, oh no. Like, I'm sure so many people have heard us and everybody else and their friends talk about like, oh man, The Quarry, oh man, Supermassive makes such cool horror games. So we're like, great. And they're going to sit down and play this and be like, this shit sucks. What are you guys talking about? I'm like, no, don't give them this one. Put Until Dawn back out. I know it was already free probably a million times, but come on.
I haven't played Crash Bandicoot 4 yet, actually. Oh. So this comes at just the right time.
Perfect, because it's really good. It is the best Crash Bandicoot game.
Yeah?
100%.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. You know, I've heard good things about it. But yeah, I haven't played Crash in just a while, so this is a good excuse to dive back, finally.
Well, now it's time for PlayStation Picks. This is where we talk about what's coming out this week, and we talk about what we've been playing this week. To start off with the drop this week, we got Disgaea 6 Complete for PS5 and PS4. That's Tuesday, June 28th. DNF Duel for PS5 and PS4, Tuesday, June 28th. Phobia, Saint Dinfa Hotel, or Dinfna, that must be a typo. That's coming out for PS5 and PS4 on Tuesday. It's an N and an F and an N. There's no way that's true. Tuesday, June 28th. This one looks interesting, right?
It's no, first... it's not a spelling
mistake. It's not a typo?
No, because that's what it actually says right here in the YouTube video.
Saint Dinfna.
No.
Wait, maybe I might have... No, yeah, that's exactly what it is.
Oh, no, yeah. There it is.
Yeah, Dinfna. Huh. Yeah, no, bad marketing for a hotel. But yeah, Phobia, that's coming to PS5 and PS4. This game looks interesting. It's a first-person horror game. The description says, explore a decadent hotel across different timelines and uncover the dark history of a fanatical cult and your role in their plans. And so if you're a big horror fan, this is one to keep an eye on. Saint Dinfna Hotel.
Blessing, my eye is on it. I'll let you know.
Thank you. Thank you, Greg. Appreciate it. Okay. We also got Cuphead, The Delicious Last Course. That is out for PS4 on Thursday, June 30th. And then Outriders World Slayer, that's out for PS4 and PS5 on Thursday, June 30th. Greg Miller, what'd you pick to play on PlayStation this week?
You know, I've been playing a whole bunch of stuff. And like, I wrote down one and I'm going to immediately deviate from it, because I kind of honestly forgot that I started this other one. Bless you. Ready for it?
I'm ready.
I started playing A Plague Tale Innocence again.
Oh.
And remember, we've been talking about this because Requiem was been up, and the we saw the trailer and the presentations, and we're like, man, that looks actually kind of cool. And we both were like, oh, well, in Plague Tale Innocence, we started, stopped, and bailed on it, right? And I was very much, it just didn't click for me at the time. I wasn't in the mood for it. I don't know what it was. And everybody has been very vocal in the audience from the game's release that this is a game I would actually really dig. I should give it a shot. I should go give it a shot. And so I have started giving it the honest college try. And I forget if I think I'm in chapter 4 right now, maybe chapter 3. Let me check my trophies. But I'm enjoying it. I'm in the corner. I've turned the corner on it. Not that I was ever like hating on it, but just before I was like, am I into this? I don't know if I'm into it. Yeah, I'm playing chapter 4 right now. And I was like, you know what? Like, I do like this. I do think, you know, and granted, you know, it's a Sobo, right? It's a smaller studio. Like, that's why people were so impressed with it, I think, when it launched, and why it, you know, Requiem looks so great or whatever. My criticism of it is like, it is very much a linear video game, and I don't even mean so much as point A to point B as much as like you walk into a room and you're like, you can just look at the room and be like, oh, this is what I got to do the thing to do that thing. I mean, like, you know what I mean? Like, you can see yourself doing everything in the room before you do it, I feel like, because it's like, oh, well, shoot the brazers down to get around the rats to get to the thing, to get the ladder. Like, I don't feel like I'm in it because of the story and I like the characters and I want to see the power set and like what's going on with the rats and everything else. But I'm not in it and being like, man, the gameplay is great. Like, I think gameplay is getting me from point A to point B. It's not bad. It's just not super interesting, if that makes sense.
Yeah. And I mean, that exact thing is why I look at the Requiem and go, okay, thank God they're adding in more action in here. Cause that's the exact same thing I felt as I was playing it. Like, the story seemed interesting. I like the relationship between the brother and sister.
Yeah, brother and sister.
Yeah. I like that back and forth of you having to care for him and make sure that he gets to the next destination safely. It reminds me a little bit of Eco, like very different in terms of gameplay, but thematically, I like games like that. And then there are also a lot of moments where I was like, oh, these guys took inspiration from The Last of Us. Like, it's very obvious in the way that is this companion thing, but then also in the stealth elements and the crafting and like the way in which story moments happen and like the dialogue as you're going. It reminds me so much of The Last of Us just in terms of design in a way that I appreciated, but also didn't necessarily enrapture me in terms of the moment-to-moment gameplay keeping me in. But I do want to pick it back up, and I'm glad that you're playing it now, because that might give me a little bit more juice to actually want to pick it up so I have somebody to bounce off of. But I probably won't start from the beginning. I want to say I got to maybe chapter 4 or 5. I got like halfway through the game, and so I might do just like a recap on YouTube and then pick it back up from where I'm at and see if I can just take it to the end, because it seems like shit gets wild later into the game.
And again, like, you know, it's one of those where chapters are pretty short. So it is that thing. You can knock out a few. You can do whatever you want. So you can stick with it. There's, 16 or 17, I forget, throughout the game. And yeah, there's that. And what I actually, you know, the interesting wrinkle to put on it, I guess, is that from a modern perspective with it, I'm playing the PlayStation 5 version of it. It's the first game in quite some time, I feel, that is using the game hint cards really well. Where, like, when I hit the PlayStation button, it pops up. It's like, oh, yeah, this chapter will take you about 26 minutes, 20, you know, keeps track of how much longer it is. And then, as, you know, the trophy whore I am, I boot it up and the game hits are there of, like, where, like, you know, every chapter has, you know, collect all the collectibles or whatever, which will eventually pay off in a trophy. And so, like, they went through and did videos for every collectible. So, like, what I'll do is, I, you know, be totally lame, and before I start the thing, I'll hit it and I'll just watch through the video and see each one of them, or, like, where should I be looking in the area? I'm like, great, cool. And that way, because I don't want to go buy it and miss it, you know, go through and get it in the first try if I can. So there's that to do too. I think they did a really nice job with the hint cards, which I don't say often because usually there's garbage.
Yeah. I forgot that they even existed until you just mentioned them.
A lot of devs did, I think, y'all.
Right. Yeah. I feel like Bucksnax was like the big one with that, and then nobody else really doubled down on it. Right. Bucksnax was the last time where I was using that thing consistently.
Yeah.
I'm playing Sonic Origins. Let me tell you, I feel like for years I've let people tell me that 2D Sonic games are actually bad, and I've let a lot of that just seep in and go, oh man, it must be pure nostalgia. I must just love these games because I was a kid and I played them. And I think that's still half true. But going back and playing Sonic 1, 2, 3 in CD as an adult, as a 27, about to be 28-year-old adult, because I've gone back and played them like a couple years ago as well. But playing them now, I'm like, man, these are some solid ass 2D platformers. Like, yeah, at times they can be janky. Yeah, at times, like, I think the momentum-based movement of Sonic can get in the way of some precise platforming. Regardless, man, the Sonic games, I think, hold up in terms of level design and the pathing. And then also just, like, those Sonic moments of getting that perfect boost and, like, hitting the perfect loop into the perfect jump into, like, getting the rings into, like, when you have those 3 to 4 seconds of, oh, I am zooming through this, and then you get to the next platforming challenge. I'm having such a blast going back through it. And again, part of that is probably still nostalgia, but even still, there's such an energy to Sonic the Hedgehog that going back to it, I'm, like, experiencing all the joy of it. Even Sonic the Hedgehog 1, which I remember being the one that I like least, and I think still probably that idea still holds to this day. Going back and playing Sonic 1, getting to Starlight Zone and having the music start and like seeing the visuals of it, I was like, God damn, I fucking love these games. And now, like, I'm actually way past halfway, most of the way through Sonic 2. And I'm at the point where I'm like, I'm just gonna play all these games, beat all these games, and maybe go for the platinum. I'm thinking about going for the platinum.
Damn.
I was talking to Tim Geddes about it, and I was worried because I wasn't getting all the Chaos Emeralds, which require you to do the bonus stages and get them right, and that's probably the most difficult and grueling thing regarding completing the Sonic games. It seems like the platinum might not involve that. It seems like you can go through all of the games and then do the new mission mode that they've added for Sonic Origins, and get the platinum that way. And if that's the case, I think I might go about it because I'm having such a blast going through it. And so shout out to Sonic Origins. I will say there have been reports and all this stuff about like there being bugs and all in like game breaking stuff. As I was playing last night, I hit a point halfway through Sonic 2 where I was like, I've not hit one bug. I don't know what these things are talking about. I've not seen any bugs. And then immediately, I hit the issue where Tails, if you're playing as Sonic and Tails, will get stuck off screen. And it is the most annoying shit ever because obviously, when I say this obviously, as if everybody knows Sonic 2, but you can get through these levels without Tails. Tails is just there hanging out the whole time. You don't need Tails. Hmm. But the annoying thing about it is that as you're going through the level, you hear Tails just bouncing on one of the bounce pads over and over and over again. And that happened to me for most of a level. Got to the end of it, I was like, thank God that's over. And then I started the next level, and he did it again. And then I started the level after that, and he kept doing it again. And it is a consistent bug that I don't know how you have this bug happen. A bug that was not in the original games. I don't know how you introduced this new bug, this entirely new bug, into this classic game. So, one, I'm impressed about that. But then also, that has been annoying for my experience. But regardless, I've been having even way more of a fun time with Sonic Origins than I expected. And so, yeah, that's what I've been playing.
Wait, were there people telling you, like, oh, these are not good? Because I always felt like 2D Sonic.
The internet tells me
loved.
That.
What?
There's like a line in the sand. Either you love Sonic or you hate Sonic.
I hear the only good one is Mania.
I mean, that's maybe the best one.
Yeah, Mania is highly
probably the
regarded.
Best one.
Yeah.
Here's what I'll say, right? Mania is good. 1, 2, 3, and Knuckles, good. Even CD, I would say, is good. The 2D Sonic games tend to be good most of the time.
Yeah.
It's when you get into 3D Sonic games where if somebody tells me these 3D Sonic games are trash, I'm going to be like, you know what? I'm not going to argue with you because a lot of them are. I think there's a good percentage of the 3D Sonic games that are not good. And a lot of the ones that are not good are the ones that people evangelize for some reason. Sonic Adventure 2 is not a good video game, but that is a lot of people's favorite Sonic game, and it blows my mind. And I think that a lot of that is rooted in nostalgia and the Chao Garden and the cutscenes and all this stuff. But like Sonic Heroes, it's a fun game. It's a pretty good game. Sonic Generations, that's a great game. Sonic Colors, that's a great game. Sonic Forces, strong okay. That's a 6 out of 10.
Strong okay.
It's a strong okay. And then like you get into other Sonic games and it kind of goes downhill.
Where's your hype right now for Sonic Frontiers? Games,
fine. Excited for Frontiers. I'm excited for it. The latest thing that they showed off was in the Direct, which is the cyberspace levels, which are the linear, traditional, classic 3D Sonic levels that they're placing into the open world. And they work pretty much as shrines. And right, so, like, you're exploring... Yeah, from Breath of the Wild. So you're exploring the Sonic... And I shouldn't say open world. I should say you're exploring the open zone.
Right.
getting into boss fights, defeating bosses, collecting portal gears, and then you're placing the portal gears into the shrines to then get access to the classic Sonic levels. You then go through those classic Sonic levels, and those kick you out to then, like... I forget what you unlock from those. I think you unlock just more bullshit. Like, it's an ever-going loop in the Sonic game. But I love that stuff. Like, that's part of what I did during my demo at Summer Game Fest that I haven't been able to talk about. And that was some of the best stuff that I got to experience out of that demo. I think that stuff's going to be a blast. And in the way that they're formatted, they are shorter than your traditional 3D Sonic levels that you get in any other 3D Sonic game. And so it feels way more replayable. Like, they have challenges attached to them. It reminds me of... almost like me in the way that we've been playing Neon White, and you'll see like Roger speedrunning against Andy, speedrunning against Barrett, and everybody going for the quickest time. It seems like Sonic Frontiers might have that sort of situation with this classic 3D Sonic levels, which I want. I hope they're able to achieve that level of, oh, we nailed what this is. So yeah, I'm looking forward to Sonic Frontiers. I'm still trepidatious regarding how it's gonna run, like, you know, frame rate, bugs, glitches, resolution, all that stuff. It doesn't look pretty. I think they could have a lot more TLC in the level design, but even still, I'm looking forward to it as another Sonic experience that if everything turns out right, could be a strong 7.5 out of 10.
Right, right. I love what they're going for. It just, it looks so rough around the edges. That's yeah. my main concern surrounding it. But 100%. I hope they pull it off, because I when I first saw that teaser trailer, I was super excited. I was like, this is it. This is the pull all stops Sonic game, AAA Sonic game. And then I saw the gameplay. I'm like, okay, all right. I'm going to have to be a little more reserved about my hype for it. But I hope they really pull it off, because it could be really cool.
Yeah, and that's exactly where I'm at with it, too. Mm-hmm. Young, have you been playing anything on PlayStation this week?
Well, in a way, I guess. I've been all in on Steam Deck these past 2 weeks. I was, like, reviewing it, and just I can't stop playing because it's just so freaking cool. But to be fair, I did download God of War on my Steam Deck, playing it on there. And it's, like, that's when it, like, hit me. Like, it wasn't that long ago that I was playing this game on the Jet Engine PlayStation 4 chonky box. And now it's in this like little thing you can hold in your hands, and it's running at like 35 to 45 frames per second at like high settings, and it looks gorgeous, and it runs super well, and I can take this wherever I want to go. And just having that realization, just I don't know, it was like that moment of like, man, technology is like, this is where we're at now, and it's only going to get better from here. So I've just been enjoying God of War on this device, and just taking it everywhere with me. And it's still as good as I remember it being. The combat's just as solid as it's always been. The performances, the everything about that game. What a game. It's like top five of all time for me, easily. And man, Ragnarok, I can't wait for that. And man, it's such an honor that I was surprised actually, like, I auditioned for some stuff for that game, and I you're gonna be killing me a lot. All I'll say about that.
Oh snap! This
game. I'm like, you I play like one of the. I wish. It's like one of the. They've already announced it, so
I saw it on your IMDb earlier.
Yeah, it's like the Berserker Stag, and I don't have much context outside of like my death screams and some of the like Nordic lines that I had to say, which was really cool. So I don't know much about the game really, but it's it just looks awesome from the trailers we've seen. And I know apparently there was supposed to be like an announcement or a release date announcement trailer or something.
Yeah, today.
Like at the end of this month. Yeah, today, and then it got delayed. And I don't know. So I guess we'll see more of that soon. But I'm so pumped for the sequel. And so I'm just like,
I can't wait.
I keep debating on whether or not I want to replay God of War 2018 on my Steam Deck, because I ever since that game came out right in 2018.
Yeah.
I played it that week it came out, blazed through it because I fucking like I adored it. I've not picked it up since. And it's that thing where I think back to it, and that was 1 week in 2018 for me. And now so much of the story is like a blur. And I'm like, oh, maybe I should play this before I get into Ragnarok. But then I'm also like, if Ragnarok really is around the corner, maybe I shouldn't burn myself out on God of War and just wait until Ragnarok and come back and experience it fresh again.
I don't know. I feel like Ragnarok is a decent ways away that you could, if you like, kind of play now-ish within the next month or so, you'd still have ample time to like
forget it
and refresh yourself with Ragnarok. So I'm going through it again. Like I downloaded just like test how well it runs, and then I found myself hooked back into it because it's just so freaking good.
Yeah, I had that happen to me a little bit with Ratchet and Clank, because when Rift Apart came out for PS Love You, we did a re-review of Ratchet and Clank the remake. And so I played it, but I played it very close to Rift Apart, and so like, after putting down the remake, it picked up Rift Apart maybe like a month or so later. And halfway through the game, I was like, oh, this is just more Ratchet and Clank, isn't it? I'm ratcheted out. Like, I'm all clanked up. But God of War, it being so narrative focused, I could see that not being as much of an issue, because I'm for sure going to be way more into the characters and story of God of War than for Ratchet. And that's going to carry so much of it. And I'm sure there's going to be different skill trees and
maybe
you play as Atreus this time.
Oh yeah, that'd be cool.
That's the thing I've not thought about, like a new possible weapon or a new possible way to play.
Yeah.
Both have to be there, right?
But what's the new weapon? What's the new axe?
Do you get Mjolnir?
Chainsaw. Yeah, you definitely
get Mjolnir.
That's a great point. Yeah, you definitely get Mjolnir.
I'm also like, one of the things that God of War 2018 was lacking, I think, is like a little more variety in some of the like bosses. Like, you fought that troll like over and over and over again. I feel like with Ragnarok, now that they have the time to like, they have like the technology and stuff like in place, the fundamentals in place, they can focus more on the content itself. It's kind of like, I think Breath of the Wild had a similar issue where it felt like so much time was spent on like making everything work that, you know, the dungeons weren't as big as they could have been. Some of the enemies were a little repetitive, and with Ragnarok, the foundation set, they can just focus on like just making a bunch of content for it. Yeah. And like adding as many like variety, enemy variety and bosses as possible and stuff like that. So I'm like excited to see where just how much more they can expand this incredible foundation they've set.
Yeah, that's what I felt Horizon Forbidden West did well, is Horizon Forbidden West came through with all this, all the everything that's been laid out in Zero Dawn regarding systems, what the lore is of the world, what these characters look like, the models and all that stuff. And then Forbidden West comes through and adds in just a bunch of different activities that are pushing like, okay, what can we place in this world to make it more vibrant, make it more interesting to explore and go through? Yeah. So Ragnarok does a similar thing where it is. Cool. No, Star Wars for some reason. God of War 2018 was just the groundwork. Now this is the real, like, this is the real shit right here.
Yeah.
That could be incredible.
Agreed.
Ladies and gentlemen, that's another episode of PS I Love You XOXO, your PlayStation podcast that records every Thursday on patreon.com/kindoffunnygames. And of course, goes up for free on youtube.com/kindoffunnygames. Of course, if you want to get that post show we're about to do with Young, you have to go to patreon.com/kindoffunnygames. But if you're not joining us, Young, where can people keep up with you?
You can find me on twitter.com/Young, yeah, for just, you know, random posts and tweets and whatever. For videos, Young, yeah, youtube.com/Young, yeah. And for voiceover stuff, Young, yeah, VO.com. Yeah, those are sort of my three main outlets. You know,
we'll see you soon in God of War. That's exciting.
Definitely, definitely, yeah. I'll be screaming a lot as you utterly decimate me as Kratos. So.
Hell yeah.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, we got a post show to do, but until next time, it's been our pleasure to serve you.